Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 6, and tonight we have our guest is John Gleason. We have an email from Derek that we're going to talk about, some adventures in developing C41, try and cross processing, the upcoming pinhole sprocket contest. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 6. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
I'm all right.
Yeah. You guys, you've had some nice weather, huh?
Real roller coaster.
Real roller coaster. I know I had to bring my plants in the other night. It was like 60 or something one day and freezing the next night. That afternoon, it was weird.
Yeah, we're getting another almost freezing night tonight, but today it was upper 60s, which was nice. Yeah, yesterday it was 81.
So, really?
Yeah.
I don't think it got that warm here at the coast, but anyways, it's not. It's coming. The weather's coming. everybody, all of our listeners who are in cold climates to the north of us, just stay positive, man. The warm air is coming. I promise. It's slowly creeping. So tonight's guest, we have John Gleason. You might know him from Instagram, Probus Photo. John, how are you?
Hey, great, Corey. How you doing?
Hanging in there, man. Just enjoying a nice evening beverage.
Ah, yes, the adult beverage.
So, John, I know you've been into photography and pinhole photography for a while. Do you want to take a second and let our listeners know a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah, I've been black and white photography for probably about 40 years now, and probably within the last 10 years is when I started doing a pinhole, but it didn't start to take a big interest in it until my family and I went up to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And going up there with a view camera is kind of a difficult thing to do just because all the heavy equipment, the tripod and all that stuff. So I thought, I've got this nice pinhole camera. It's lightweight. It can still take 4x5s and I can take it on the plane without any trouble. It turned out at that point, I just started getting hooked on it. It was easy to process and I've been shooting ever since, and mostly I shoot around my house. Not too far from us is a beautiful park system, and that's where I take all my my shots of all those trees that you see on my my website.
Cool, I like trees.
Well, they're nice and leafy and green.
They're nice and leafy and green. That's what me and Mark were just talking about, the weather, and I was just about to say, my trees are just now starting to pop out little tiny green leaves on them all over the place. So I was like, everybody just hang tight, because if it's happening here, it won't be too long for you guys up there.
Yeah, we're starting to get some. We're starting to see more of the red buds coming out now, which is probably the beautiful time here in the eastern Kentucky and in the northern Kentucky area that we are.
Sure. So, the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about a little bit about finding materials to make a camera with, and I've made a few cameras, and Mark, you've made a few cameras in the past. So what we want to talk about a little bit about is what are you going to do once you have your camera made? Once you have you found your tin or your oatmeal container and you've got the pinhole made and it's taped up and you got the paper in it, you make your exposure, what are you going to do with it? You're going to have to develop it. So you're going to have chemistry and a red light. But if you're developing at home, it's really easy. All you have to do is swap your developer from a film developer to a paper developer if you're shooting paper in your pinhole. So what kind of developers do you like to use, John, for developing paper?
Well, paper, primarily I use Dektal, and I have to process a few paper negatives when I was starting out. with an 8x10 8x10 pinhole that I've got. And I've switched over just because of the expense of film. I've been switched over to X-rays, which is a little bit cheaper than just regular film.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I like the X-ray too. I developed my X-ray film in X-Tal. I normally do like 1:1.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say you can do that. I think you can do like 2:1, but I think you kind of start messing with the contrast. I haven't really done much more dilutions other than just 1:1. That seems to work the best for me, including with Dektal. That's what I do with Dektal too. Yeah. Or 2:1. I can't remember. Maybe 1:1. Maybe it's 2:1. 1:1, I think. Yeah.
I usually use 2:1 for Dektal. Just it gets a night a little slower. Gives me an idea where things are going to go with the paper.
Sure. I do that too. I do 2:1 for the paper, the Dektal, and I do 1:1 when I do the X-ray film.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I have all this written down on a dry erase board in my little makeshift darkroom over there, because if I don't, I'll forget it.
I've got my notebook too, handy at all times. But I'm using Rodinalt for my X-ray, and I like it. It's a nice one-shot developer, and you can store it as a stock solution for. It's in terms of years as opposed to just months like the X-Tal.
Wow. Sure. Crazy. Years? Yeah, I guess so. I've already seen pictures of people being like, this bottle of Rodinal has been here for, I don't even know how long.
30 years.
It's crystallized.
But it does, this nasty brown appearance, but it's still got the same effectiveness. At least in my hands, it's been great. And, with the nice thing about X-ray film is the same thing. It's sort of like handled like paper, and you can process it under a red light, and you can see the image, just appear before your eyes within probably about 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I like about it. Definitely is being able to, get in the darkroom and just use your little red light, and you don't have to have a fancy red light. Like a photography darkroom light if you don't have access to one. I mean, I've read about people using just red, like camping headlights with the red light on. Whatever you need to do it, that works. So
that's a clever idea.
Yeah, I think maybe one. I think maybe in later on we'll do a Toby, a guy that I follow on Instagram. Toby, he started doing a hashtag called Gorilla Darkroom. Because he can't set up his darkroom until everybody in his house goes to bed, I think, and he does it at like his kitchen sink, so that's pretty. I mean, on a budget, there's lots of different ways you can do it. Just depends on, I guess, how bad you want to do it. But so we have paper for negatives, regular photo paper for negatives. We have X-ray film for negatives. Both of those can be handled under a red light. And then we also now have, thanks to Ilford, who brought back the direct positive paper, which makes a positive image on your paper instead of doing a negative. And then you would have to contact print it. But you can skip through all that and go straight to a positive image on your paper. Do you have much experience with that? Have you used any of that, John?
No, I have not. I mean, it looks like it's a very appealing product just because of the price.
Sure.
It's certainly a lot cheaper than buying eight by ten film or larger. And then you've got at the end of it, you've got a nice direct tone picture on the fiber base that's going to be one of a kind.
Yeah, that's what I that's what interests me the most about it is that you can pick any format you want. You know what I mean? Like if you wanted to do 11x14, you can do 11x14. If you want to do something weird like 7x10, you can just cut it and make a 7x10. You can do anything you want with it. You're not going to be held to the restrictions of a permanent 8x10 or 11x14 or 4x5 or whatever. You know, you can you can make whatever size you want to do, depending on what size you want to get. And I think that the, that direct positive comes in a roll like three and a half feet wide by like 60 feet or something.
Wow. That'd be nice.
Yeah. That would be fun, huh? Yeah. I was thinking about it would be crazy to do like full-size portraits, you know, like make a pinhole camera that's out of 2x4s and plywood that's 6 feet tall and 3 feet wide is the paper and, you know, and 3 feet deep and put a whole a 6 foot stretch of that inside of it and like do like full size portraits of people.
There's a photographer who did that, who actually had these had this camera that he built by himself that looked like a human being, but he would load like 8x10 prints or paper from top to bottom and side to side with separate pinholes. So then he would just kind of cob these all together once he processed it. It was beautiful work. Yeah. So I like that idea.
Mark?
Yeah.
If I make a 6 foot tall pinhole camera, will you let me take a picture with it?
You got to be a little bit bigger than that. That would actually be a reduction of me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it had to be like an 8 footer?
No. It just a bit over 6 feet.
Yeah. Okay, I'm holding you to that. Yeah. You heard it, man. Here, Jeff. Mark's going to be the first subject.
There you go.
Wow, that's going to be it. That would be crazy because you'd have to make 6 foot developing trays.
Well, yeah.
That would get out of control. You'd have to be mixing up like 5 gallon buckets of chemistry.
Yeah. You need like a horse trough.
Yeah, totally. That probably would work. Like those galvanized tubs. Yeah. Like you can get it from like the hunt.
You know, thought comes to me. If you did something like that, you could actually, but you probably need an assistant, is that you could just take it like do it like you're washing and just draw, just take a drop in one end to end back and forth. And I've seen them do that with like the film washi on rice paper, where they do a whole 120 roll film.
Huh. Yeah. When I was in college, one of my buddies bought a jar of that, the liquid emulsion.
Oh yeah.
The liquid light. And we painted it on he did a couple of pictures that were bigger than 16 by 20, like 30 by 32. And that's what we did. We stood over top of the tray and like both had a corner with gloves on and like went back and forth with it, you know. That was the only way to do it, unless you did like half or then put the other half in and somebody held the other half up. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, we went back and forth with it like that. But it wasn't like 6 feet. I mean, that would be like, wow. That'd be a project. That sounds like fun, though.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah.
So back to normal size pinhole cameras and what you're going to do with them once you have them made and you got paper in them and you shot it. Yeah, so you can do direct positive paper, X-ray film, or paper negatives. And I think I said this already, but if you're developing at home, all you're doing is getting a red light, swapping out your film developer for paper developer, and instead of having your chemicals in jars, you're just going to dump them in trays, turn the light on, the red light on, and then just get to it. John, I started using Xtol because it's supposed to be a little bit better for the environment. Do you have any products that you've come across that are a little bit more eco-friendly for kind of like the home developer? And
I've started to look at that process, and I like the line that I see that's put out by Legacy Pro is something called Eco Pro, and they have the ascorbic acid, just like the Xtol. And then they have things like they have a citric acid stop bath, a neutral rapid fixer, and then a eco-friendly hypo. So it's a pretty nice line, it looks like, and probably good for film. But I'm not so sure I'm going to be using that for for my paper yet, or my my printing process yet, just because I'm not comfortable changing something that I know is pretty archival.
Right. I haven't even got to that point yet. I'm still just, as far as archival goes, I'm just having fun getting back into it. But as soon as I start doing the 16 by 20, I'm going to have to get back into the archival with the, with everything, you know, with selenium toning and everything like that when I start the notes, because that's fiber paper, and that's going to be a little different story. But that day will come soon. We will see. Okay, so yeah, so that's what we can do. So once you have your negative made, be it paper or X-ray film, you can either do like John was saying, and he just scans his. Then what do you do? Invert it in Photoshop, John?
Yeah, I just invert it in Photoshop. It's a pretty easy process. And right. Even on the Apple, you can do the same thing with just the basic program without a whole lot of effort.
Sure. But if you wanted to, and you have your darkroom set up, and you have your red light on, and you have a little lamp, you can make yourself a contact print. And all the contact print is you put down your paper negative. No, I'm sorry. You put down your unexposed piece of paper. You put your paper negative or your X-ray film on top of that face down. Find yourself a piece of glass, put it over top of it. Use your light, flick your light on and off to make an exposure, and then that's it. You don't have to have an enlarger or anything fancy. If you go online and check out YouTube, there's plenty of tutorials that'll show you how to make a test strip to come up with your exposure for your image. So we won't get into doing that here because that's really kind of drawn out and dry. But and there's plenty of people that have done a much better job than my explanation. So I would suggest going and checking out one of those. And I use a little 7.5 watt light bulb and an old lamp, and I literally just hold it arm's length above my glass and where I'm making my contact print. And that's all I do. That's it. It doesn't have to be any more fancier than that. So if you're thinking you have to get an enlarger or anything, you really don't have to. Do you do contact prints, John, with an enlarger? Or what are you doing?
Yeah, I have an enlarger and I do contact prints that way. I have a contact frame that put the negatives in the paper in, and so it keeps it nice and flat, and it's a fancier system, but I think yours is probably better.
Yeah, and what I did is I had a couple of old clamps that have like rubber tip clamps. And I took a piece of foam cord board, and I found an old picture, took a piece of glass out of it, cleaned it real good with some Windex, and I would put my paper down, put my negative on top of it, put the glass on top of it, on top of all this is going to be on top of the foam core board, put a clamp on each end, just kind of make a sandwich with it. And then there you go. You know, I mean, that'll get you started at least. And from there, once you get into it, your budget will be the limit of what you want to buy. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was looking at printing frames. They're kind of expensive. So foam core board, a couple clamps, and an old picture I took the glass out of. That was my solution.
Yeah, I had mine from years and years ago that I've never used except for contact for doing negatives, checking out the negatives out of a roll. But, you know, nowadays it's nice.
Yeah.
By 10. But I don't
think. You know, I like. Yeah, sure. Totally. I like to take my rolls of film once I get done making them. And instead of, I mean, it's fun to scan it because you can see it instantly, but I still like coming out and making a contact sheet and looking at it.
Oh yeah.
You know, and actually like seeing it, you know, and being like, okay, you know, and like not having to, I mean, it's nice because you can do dust and you can see them really quick. I got a new scanner, that came with the actual inserts. So it's my other scanner didn't do that. I don't know. Cause your scanner has the inserts though, doesn't it, Mark?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I didn't have the insert. So if I scanned like 35 millimeter or anything, I had to do like the scan preview for the whole strip and like go in and like select each square separately and scan it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why I had such a bad taste for 35 millimeter for so long, because I have to sit there and like take the square and move it over and then hit scan, and then take the square and move it over and hit scan. But mm-hmm. with the new scanner I have, it has inserts, so I can put, you know, two strips of six in it, and then it just scans them all in just a couple of minutes. So it's really nice. But okay, well, hey, let's take a break and we'll be right back. Hey, Mark, so we got a email from a guy named Derek.
Yes.
I think this is probably the longest one we've gotten. Derek, thank you.
Very detailed.
Yeah, sure. And there's John. John, hey. You, we all made it back?
Yes, we did.
Cool.
Sounds on, and I can hear you all.
Cool. We got an email this week from, I'm going to say, if I say your last name wrong, I apologize, Derek. Hutchion? It's not Eon. Hutchion. And he is on Instagram at Hutchie Photo. HutchieePhoto. Hutchie Photo. So Derek sent us a really long list, a long email about he was into digital, using a pinhole for a digital camera. And then he went to using a pinhole cap for his Canon FTB using T-Max 400. And he goes on to say that he wants to get back into it. Yep. And he says that if I'm going to do pinhole, use film to make it worth it. Using the FTB and pinhole just doesn't do it for me. I don't really want to get into shooting medium format for the cost of film processing and size of camera, but you know, processing and the cost of film for the most part is about the same as 35 millimeter. It just depends on where you're at. But he said 6 months ago into the Canon panoramic cameras, I'd like an X-Pan too. Would you guys like an X-Pan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've got a.
So I feel like I'm going to. You got one?
Well, I've got a. I've got a pan, in a, not in the 35 millimeter, but the 120 size. That's a 6x17 reality, so simple, subtle.
Yeah. That's but a good sorry. Camera. No, that's all right.
It's beautiful.
I thought you were going to say, oh, I have an X-Pan. I was like, oh, God. No, so he goes on to say, so I feel like I'm going to shoot film pinhole. I want to shoot 35 that do it. The Le Rouge 130 and the Ondu 135 panoramic. I was wondering if you guys knew of any other cameras that are 35 millimeter panoramic pinholes, or had any insight into which camera I should purchase for being a relatively new pinhole photographer with film. I'm interested in knowing what you like and don't like about those cameras. So, Mark, you got a little bit of experience with 35 millimeter pinhole, don't you?
Right. Yeah, I've had a few models. I guess a lot of people say that 35 millimeter doesn't have the same resolution as medium format. I guess panoramic could help. He mentions the Le Rouge. I've heard good things about that. I have an Ondu 35, but I only have the standard 35. There's also the Nopo company. They do a panoramic 35. He can also try. There's still a few out there. There's the P. Sharon's. They're paper pinholes, you know, the thick cardboard kits.
Oh,
you can
probably
find one of those for about 35 US sometimes.
They make a panoramic, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, like a regular and a panoramic, sure.
Right. And there was a company called Gacken, and it was taken over by Reflex. They make this little kit. It's plastic, but it's fun. It's a stereo pinhole, but you're able to move the plate while the camera's still closed. You can move a plate, and it will go from a twin stereo to a single large panoramic. So those are some kits you can try. Yeah,
those sound interesting.
Those are they're all fun. You, a lot of the those cameras, you maybe get on a roll of 36, you might get 18 exposures. So if he's looking for more exposures per roll, then I guess that's the way to go.
Yeah. So there you go, Derek. That's about as close as we could get to you, other than I guess he could take a matchbook and make a matchbook pinhole camera with the two 35 cassettes on each end and just make it longer and make a panoramic, right? Can you do that? Just make the body longer and then that would work. So if you can't get a hold of a camera, Derek, you can go on YouTube probably has it. Google it. Yeah, just find the matchbook pinhole camera. It uses two 35mm cassettes. One is a take-up spool, and just make the matchbox longer, and you can make it any format you want.
Yeah, but the problem with the – you'd have some limit, I guess, as far as the diameter of the pinhole is and you'd start to get – the longer you would make your frame, the more vignetting you'd get once you get – you got to be careful with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be a good way for him to test it out, at least see if he likes it before he went and purchased a panoramic unit.
Yeah. Some of those models that he was talking about, that they are kind of high end, you know.
The LaRouge, I don't think
LaRouge. I think you, 35L. I think you can get that about $100 US. That's something that you can find on eBay and I think Etsy. They sell those. It's from France, but like the no pose and stuff like that. Those can be like $150, I think, at least.
Yeah, they're up there, huh? But they're nice.
Yeah,
they're very beautiful.
Yeah, they're really nice.
Yeah, and you just mentioned that you have the Nopo 120.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a beautiful camera.
I love that.
Isn't that like a square? It's like a cube.
Well, it looks like an old Hasselblad. And I mean, when you carry it around, it's like a wooden Hasselblad. It's just it's an eye turner when you walk around with it. And the neat thing is they're going to on pinhole day, they're going to come out with a whole new set of models. And
I saw that. That's exciting to see.
How do you like that twist shutter?
I love it. I really like it. It's it took a little time to get used to it as far as trying to set like a second or something with that. I think basically what Corey was talking about is a little just putting your finger on it when you twist it and then take it off and on, it works just fine.
I do a lot of the lens cap shutters with my own homemade. I just use the lens cap as my shutter, so that's what I was thinking. If I ever got one, I would just kind of twist it already and have that.
I've used it, but I tend to fumble around with it, and I usually drop a lens cap, so I get a double exposure that way. So, but
I've been there.
Yes, so I think for me, it's just the finger works just great.
Yeah, no, that's a very great looking camera.
Just remember to keep your fingers out of your pinhole. So there you go, Derek. Keep your fingers out of your pinhole, and those are probably about the best options that we can have that we know of. Anyways, I'm sure there's probably numerous ones. Does the Slim at the Slaboratory, does he make a 35mm pinhole panoramic? He does.
He's toyed around with 35mm. I think he's even put some 35mm in his 120s, but he doesn't sell a regular 35mm. I know he's left the plans for free for anybody who wants to download and 3D print their own.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, so there you go, Derek. That's what we got for you, buddy. And speaking of 35mm, last week I talked about doing the sprocket hole contest. So we're kicking it off right now. We're going to have, what's today's date?
19th.
The 19th. So we'll go to May the 19th. How about that? The next show, May the 19th. And what we want to do is just have a little sprocket contest. where you take your pinhole and you use 35 millimeter and you get an image across the sprockets. So got a couple weeks to come up with an idea and shoot something. John, you're gonna jump in and give it a try. You got some way to shoot a roll of 35 millimeter. Yeah.
I've got a Holga pinhole that
cool.
It's a beautiful camera. It's I got the 120 size again, but from the Holga mods you can get the cushions for the for your can't your 35 millimeter canister. Makes it nice conversion.
Yeah, I got to make something like that. I got to come up with a plan because I'm gonna do it too. But we're gonna find somebody to judge. So between now and then, we're gonna work all that out, and I'm gonna give out some prizes for whoever has the best. Other than having the bragging rights of having the best sprocket, you know that's definitely going to be the top of the list. But we're gonna have a first prize and a little prize, and we got to find somebody to judge it. So. I guess it doesn't matter what it is as long as it's been shot on sprocket holes, right? Mark, what do you think about that?
Sure. It'll be fun.
Simple.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to throw that in there since we were talking about Derek and that. So, yeah, so go check out Derek's photography on Instagram at Hutchie Photo. That's Hutchie. Photo, Hutchie Photo. Mark, what did you didn't get into too much shooting this week, did you?
No, I really didn't have an opportunity. Yeah.
Hey, that's how it goes, man. I mean.
Yeah, some weeks feast, some weeks famine.
Yeah. I had a crazy week this week. Well, not a crazy week, but I had a fun week this week because I got my C41 kit and I've had it for a little while, and I've just been kind of sitting on it. But I finally said, "Okay, you know, I got a good 10 rolls of film of color in my freezer, mm-hmm. And I needed to get it out of there." So I mixed it up, and I've been developing color, and it's really cool. And if you're developing black and white at home, developing color is so much easier. So much easier, I think it is. Anyways, it's not as fidgety. It's like straightforward, you know, like you have to like go find your development times. And then before I develop my film, once I get it on the reel, I'll save a little snip and check my fix, you know, and do all these things, you know. But it's with the color film, you have a certain temperature, and no matter what speed you're shooting your film at, you still develop it at 3.5 minutes.
That's cool.
And you have a bleach and a fix step that's been combined, and it's called the Blix. And no matter what, that is 6.5 minutes. And then you have a warm water rinse for 3 minutes. Then you have a stabilizer that lasts 1 minute. And then you have a minute pre-soak at 102 degrees Fahrenheit before you start developing or anything. So it goes really quick. I mean, like once you get your chemicals up to temperature, man, you just goes right. I like it better. It's so much more cut and dry. I mean, it's like everything. Once you get it to temperature, that's all you have to worry about.
Cool.
So, I thought it was pretty fun. I think next I'm going to get a. I'm going to do the E6 kit. And develop slides.
Yeah.
I think I would like that a little bit better. I don't know. I tried the cross process and I didn't dig it, man. I don't know what it was about it.
It's not for everyone.
Yeah, I did a roll. I shot a roll of Fuji Velvia 100 that expired in like 2011, I guess. Mm-hmm. I shot a roll of that in my Holga, and I had 3 rolls that I had shot in my pinhole. And I'm not into it. I actually talked to Denise
mm-hmm.
on Instagram. And she bought some of my expired film. I said, I was just joking. I was like, "Hey, you want to buy some expired?" She's like, "Yeah, I'll take some." And I was like, "Okay, cool. I'll tell you what, you know, and I'll let it go." Cause, I've never really been much of an expired film person. John, do you do much cross processing? Are you an expired film fan?
I don't, mostly not. I've got some expired Polaroid that's been in my, freezer for about 12 years. Probably.
Wow. Year.
So I've got to try to use it one day.
What film is it?
Oh, it's the negative oh gosh, it's the old negative positive. It's got the print and plus the negative together. I forget the name of it. Like the 585 or something. Or
wow,
yeah, but it was beautiful when I used it the first time, but I have not gotten back to it. I've got many other projects going on right now, so
sure.
I haven't played with it.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, did you get out and do any shooting this last week, John?
Yeah,
have you, been out in the
wild?
Yeah,
I took out. I've got a 4x5 Holgemod that's a division one of his Da Vinci series. It's really a beautiful lightweight camera, and I tried to using some Fomapan 100, which I know you guys weren't really wild about it, just because of the long reciprocity. But
reciprocity,
but
sure.
I tell you what, it was really. I got some. I fixed it. I developed it in Rodinal again, and I really found it to be nice tones. You know, the nice thing about sitting around 2-3 minutes for a exposure to go off is that you can find another. I get a chance to see what else is out there, and you know, I get about 3 or 4 more pictures just in one setting. So it's beautiful.
Sure. I can't say anything about Fomapan because I honestly I haven't shot it. That's just what I read about it. Mark, you shot it.
I have, and my observation: the larger the format, the better it is. I mean, my 120, it's kind of give and take. Some's good, some's really bad. But I've seen a lot of good 4x5 and larger with it. You know,
sure. Cool. Okay. Well, hey, let's take a little break and we'll be right back. Hey, so we are going to be, first off, my phone's about to die. I'm sorry. I had to take my earphones out and plug it into the wall because my phone was about to die. So we're going to be, Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day is coming up on April the 29th, and I'm going to be in Raleigh. So if you want to meet up and do some pinhole photography and a little photo walk, let me know, because I'm going to be heading out that way and hooking up with another podcast person, Andre Dominguez from the Negative Positives podcast, and we're going to meet up and have some fun. Mark, what are you going to? You got any plans? Or are you just going to be just hanging out?
I'm going to wing it still.
Yeah.
No definite plans yet.
Definitely. Yeah, well, that's all right. Hey, I mean, this is the first year I'm going to get out and do anything. I've always just kind of just shot unofficially, I guess, is the best way to say it. You know, I just kind of had fun. But so I think we've come to the point where we're just going to kind of do some shout-outs. So, Mark, you got a couple that you want to get out there?
Yeah.
Sorry, John just connected with us. Hey, John.
Hey, I'm back.
Mark's telling us about his shout-outs.
Okay, sure.
All right. I've been kind of inspired by LorraineHealy.mfa on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
She's up in the Pacific Northwest, but travels all around Argentina and some other places. She makes some great shots. And another one I've been looking at is an account somewhere from Asia. It's firehorse_pinhole. This account shoots mostly in 35mm pinhole, so that might be something for Derek to be interested in.
Sure.
But yeah, it shoots a lot of color, has interesting compositions. So that's kind of been that's helping me.
Yeah. Lorraine, I saw those pictures when she was, where was she at? Argentina?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the subway. She was looking down into the subway entrance or something. I saw those.
Yeah, those are kind of cool.
Yeah, just kind of like street photography, pinhole street photography. There you go. That works out pretty neat, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. John, do you have anybody that you want to do a shout out to that gives you daily inspiration?
Sure. I have two photographers that I really enjoy. Both very different. First guy is Corien Hoorman. I don't know if I'm saying that right. He's a Dutch photographer that does primarily solography. Mm-hmm. And I'm just a real sucker for solography anyway. I think it's just a beautiful technique. Just haven't gotten around to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last person is Burkhard Beerbaums. He's a German pinhole photographer. Does some beautiful double exposures.
I follow him.
I just cannot figure out how he's putting on how he visualizes those in his head to get all that together.
What was the name of the first account? It sounded like there was a little bit of a static issue or something.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear what it was. It's Corien, Corine, Hoorman, Hoorman.
Oh yeah.
And it's Corien Hoorman Photography on Instagram. Yeah. And it's again, beautiful solography.
Yeah. I follow both of those actually.
It's a small town.
It is, isn't it? You know? But that's okay. I mean that's good that people are getting around and everybody's seeing different stuff, you know. I have two. One of mine is at JC_Lomo. And the other one is at In Avoidance of Reality. And they both do. JC Lomo does more, he does some pinhole work, but more basic kind of photography. But both those accounts are really good. I really like seeing everything that comes from them. Cool. Okay, well, I guess we got the Sprocket contest going on, and we have Pinhole Day coming up. So, John, do you want to let everybody know where they can find you at and take a look at your work?
Sure. I can be found at multiple places. I'm on Flickr and Instagram at Provis Photos, and then I have my own website, provisphotos.com, which I don't update much anymore, but in case you're really interested in see what I did many years ago, that's what you'll see.
Cool. You're on Flickr too, then. I think I'm the only person in the universe who's not on Flickr.
Well, it's a nice. I think it's a nice venue. It's not. You don't get a lot of the advertising and things like that you get on Instagram, and it seems like it's a little more elevated as far as the photography you see on there.
Yeah, and Mark, you've been on Flickr for a long time. How do you like Flickr?
I like it. It's there's the discussions and stuff like that can be enlightening, minus the trolls, but there is a certain level of photography on there there's an elevated, and with the groups and classifications, you can get really specific on finding your photos of what you were looking for.
Is there a pretty big pinhole?
Yeah, I think there must be 25 to 30 groups just devoted to different kinds of pinhole.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's a reality so subtle, and also they hold a wide WBC pinhole.
Yeah, if there's a pinhole, it probably has its own group.
Yes, it does.
So, yeah, there's the undos, and so forth, and they're all broken out, the zero image and stuff like that.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that it was that big of a thing on Flickr, but like I say, I'm not on.
I think that's how I found Reality So Subtle, I think, was through Flickr.
I found Reality from another account that everybody should be following if you're not already following it, is Eddie, I'm gonna say his last name wrong, Erdman.
Yeah
he the first picture I saw of his was a 6x17 image, and it was in like the wind turbine field.
Mm-hmm.
And it was color, I think he used Ektar maybe, but it was a really long exposure. And the wind turbines in the field, the actual turbines, the blades that are spinning, they just look like big giant white discs. Mm-hmm. And man, as soon as I saw that picture, I was like, oh man, that's what got me into the reality camera so much. And I kind of bought a few, and then I bought another one. And then he had to start making models with, you know, filter rings on the front of them. So then, you know, what are you going to do? You have to have one of those too, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks so much, John, for coming.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, it's nice to meet and talk with you. And we'll talk to everybody next week. We hope everybody's had a good week, and we hope you all have a great, great week coming up.
All right.
Talk to you guys soon.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. So if you'd like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Instagram at Pinhole Cannon, and also the show's Instagram, which is The Lenses Podcast. And you can reach us through email, which is thelensespodcast@yahoo.com. And you can get a hold of Mark on Twitter, Flickr, and Instagram at The Three-Eyed Monster. Thanks.